Today, the guest becomes the co-host. The Big D, 3D Dave, is back to co-host with me. Even Chuck Norris asked Dave for 3D printing advice. We had so much fun in last week's episode that I took a unanimous vote of one and asked him back. It was totally unanimous. Our guest in the lounge today is one whose company motto is Made for Fun, which is the same phrase my parents used when I was conceived. When his bags hit the board, they slide right in. Ooh. Tyler with Temecula Yard Games is with us.
No. All these dad jokes.
I love it. I love it.
All right, let's roll video. Oh, you have to dance. Hey, welcome to the lounge. I'm Matt with Voltner Woodworking and your host of the Maker Lounge podcast, where we have a rotating group of makers hanging out and talking craft to each other. Thanks for listening wherever you are, from Temecula to Long Island. I hope you've been enjoying the podcast so far. If you haven't heard, we have a new Patreon subscription, and we have a couple new patrons to shout out this week. Justin with J&E Designs and Annette with 513 Woodworks. You probably know some of those names. Get in the action by heading over to patreon.com/MakerLoungePodcast if you want to get a chance to win free swag. Guys, thanks for being here and putting up with my intros, you know, cheesy as they may be, but I'm a dad, so we talk dad jokes.
I liked it. I liked it for sure.
Dave, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me back. Thanks for the unanimous vote.
Yes. You know, there was a little bit of deliberation that happened, but yeah.
Internal.
Right. Well, as I was editing last week's podcast, I'm like, I got to have this guy back on. And I'm like, well, why not this week? So thanks for the quick turnaround on.
I'm flattered. Back.
Yeah.
I'm flattered. Well, thank you.
Yeah. So don't screw it up. He was a great guest, but co-host,
he was terrible. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll put him on the guest list instead of the co-host list. Well,
I've been interviewed before, so I had that down. But this is the first time co-hosting, so it could be terrible.
Yeah. Oh, that's all right. I, you know, we will totally hold it against you, but it's still all right. We're gonna make a ton of reels just out of your questions alone.
Great.
Yeah. Before we get to Tyler, tell people where they can find you so that way they can start looking you up while they're listening to the show.
Tyler, though, right? Tyler,
no, you.
Not me. Tyler.
Before we get to Tyler, yeah.
Oh, see, this is what's confusing. Dave from 3D DIY Dave. Find me on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, but mainly on Instagram. But, you know, you don't have to do that.
Enough about you. Enough about you.
Exactly.
Everybody it's already follows you.
Go back to the previous episode. Right. It's not, you know, I don't care.
That's right. All right, Tyler. That's with humble. Temecula Yard Games in the land of wine.
That's, yes, lots of it.
Yeah.
Lots of it.
Do you
I don't know if it's just my house or the region. We'll see. My wife is a member at almost all the wineries at one point or another.
See, I would find that dangerous. Yeah, definitely dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's positive. It's positive.
So. Yeah. Well, that's good. But you don't go or?
No, I definitely go. I definitely go. It's a good spot. I mean, we're like, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes from there. So
yeah,
it's easy to pop out there and do your thing and come right back or whatever.
And when you go, do you bring your business cards with you and hand them out and say you guys should use some cornhole boards?
I'm always critiquing cornhole boards when I see them out. Always. And I actually made a sale one time because I posted on Instagram that, like, hey, this place needs some new boards. And they hit me up and they made 4 sets. So I'll keep them nameless right now because they know who they are. But that was a good opportunity. So I guess when I'm out, I'm just going to start talking trash about people's stuff. And then
You know, you
pays
should
dividends.
You,
so.
You could pull a Duresta and then have a stencil that you just keep with you all the times, a stencil and some spray paint, and then just spray paint your name over their cornhole boards, like just tag it.
No, yeah, you might not. Yeah. You might not want to do that though, because if you do that, then they might think he made it.
Oh, true.
You know.
Yeah.
What I mean? Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. I don't want my name on that kind of stuff.
Right.
But yeah. You know.
Unless the stencil say get a new board, call.
Right.
Call here, or just like strategically break it somehow so that they have to get a new one. And, like,
right.
I noticed your board's broken.
So. Yeah. You're stabbing all the bags, so they're just leaking all over the place. Yeah. And you just leave a contact me if you need any replacements.
I'm not above shameless self promotion, so you know.
Yeah.
You got to do it.
You got to do it, right? Yeah. You got to get out there. So
yeah.
That's partly why I'm wearing all of my own gear. What's that?
Yeah.
ABC, always be closing.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
So when I went to school, you know, it wasn't always who was the best artist. It was the best person who could promote themselves. And and the person who makes it in life is the one who's just, you know, always out there, always closing, always promoting themselves and networking and doing all that stuff. So never be shameless about that.
Yeah.
You could tell
that's kind of what we do.
The two of us are wearing both of our hats and our shirts. And then there's Dave. Yeah. He's in the middle on my screen. And he's like, well, I don't sell things. So give
that, is Dave's uniform.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's standard gamer attire.
We're going to make this work. Keep going. Ignore me.
Oh, that's obviously not a sticker beat sticker that you're trying to put on.
No, it's actually really hard to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
I put a sticker on my hat, everybody. So
now when I edit part of the stuff that we did before and put it later, then there'll be a sticker there, and then there won't be a sticker there, then there will be a sticker there.
Like, what happened in the middle of this podcast? What I need to do is just put more stickers on me.
Right. As you go throughout the podcast, you keep putting more and more stickers. That's great. I'm going to start doing like Maker Lounge podcast stickers.
Oh, those are nice. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
These actually, we'll get to you soon, Tyler. I promise. Where's my camera? So these stickers I ended up doing through Sticker Beat because I was using another company for my Voltner woodworking ones. But I like the peel tabs. I got some from somebody else.
Yeah.
The little peel here things makes it so much easier.
They're pretty sweet.
Yeah. Well, we didn't come here to talk about stickers and hats. But so give us a flavor, Tyler, what you do.
It's a long story, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's all right.
I'm one of those. I appreciate that. So I'm one of those, I don't know how you call it, pandemic woodworkers. We all know, kind of came around the same time because we were all bored and whatnot. So I don't know, honestly, I don't even really play cornhole. I'm not like a hardcore cornhole guy. I just decided one day I was going to build cornhole boards and it just sort of took off and they started selling and, you know, I was doing my thing. And then all of a sudden I was doing a lot of things and on a lot more things. And I enjoyed the ability to bankroll new tools and whatnot. And so I sort of like got into the whole thing and I've just been obsessed with it ever since. And so it seems weird to say, but that's almost been 3 years now, since the beginning of 2020 ish. So,
so you're professional.
So what's that?
You're a professional. You're seasoned veteran now.
I feel like it. Yeah. I feel like it. So yeah, the first year was like, you know, 14 boards and that was like a massive effort. And then the second year was a massive, like 100 board year. We're just turning and burning everything and like selling everything. And I happened to have a job that was like, allowed me to, you know, spend some time out here, a lot of time out here. And so that was positive. And I just sort of fell in love with the whole game. And I have always said that it's like, it's been an experiment in just running a business because selling anything successfully is like, you got to turn it into a business. And I've heard, honestly, I've heard Mike Coffey say this a bunch of times, and I'll paraphrase what he said, but it's like, if you're going to do this, take it seriously and take every part of the business seriously. And so that's what I've sort of done. And I've just sort of created this little ecosphere of Etsy, physical sales, small things, 3D print things now. And so it's totally evolved. And I actually like to call it like TYG 2.0. It's like,
nice.
It's totally evolved to like something that's just a, you know, Etsy's so totally self-sufficient, all that kind of stuff. So we'll get into that, but that's kind of the gist of the whole thing. So
Cool.
You say most of your sales is through Etsy?
Actually, Cornhole is is word of mouth, number one. Yeah. A lot of it's local, and that's honestly on purpose, because shipping boards is sort of painful in terms of like crossing your fingers that that board that you worked for 8 hours on is going to make it on time and arrive like in one piece. And I've actually had some break, which is like the most frustrating thing possible to see your artwork just exploded on the way there.
What's a set of boards had to redo.
They're lighter now, but they're probably about 60 pounds
to ship.
Sometimes I'll shove the sometimes I'll shove the bags in there too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more weight, but yeah, and so those processes have also like evolved, and I've actually spent time on figuring out what I'm going to do to like package things up, buy proper boxes, and that's another thing I heard from another maker was like,
yeah,
go buy proper shipping materials and proper things. And honestly, it looks better. It looks more professional when it shows up proper instead of like some box that I hobbled together with three rolls of duct tape, which I've
like
done.
A
trust
used
me.
Used Amazon box turned inside out.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I'm not opposed to turning priority USPS boxes inside out. Well, let's be clear about that. Right. But
Yeah.
But something like, by your own branded boxes or stuff, it looks real nice.
Yeah, custom with either a sticker or sometimes I've even laser engraved them and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. So
that's nice. I typically
you don't need to spend a lot of money.
I order through Uline and I get most of my boxes, you know, for the majority of the things that I make, I get Uline boxes, and then I have a bunch of different stamps. They're all sitting right here. I have a bunch of different stamps that I, you know, stamp things with, and that's my version of it. But I have seen people laser it. Is that a pretty painless process to do, or?
So with the little diodes, you can just literally pick them up and set them on things and just laser with them. I've even done it on cornhole boards. I don't do it often. I did it a couple times, and it's just kind of like, I don't know. Now I'll just slap a sticker on there or something to identify it when it shows up. But, and plus it's pretty obvious when it shows up what that is, if a cornhole board shows up on your porch. So, so I've definitely, and actually Etsy is sort of like where I spend the most time packaging and stuff, you know, trying to figure out what looks good. And, you know, if something comes in like a ripped up box or whatever, you just shove in there, it doesn't look good. So,
yeah.
So with the laser, you could, if you're back to packaging, when you're sending stuff out, you could cut out like these origami cardboard folding things that you could use as like packaging corners or like, you know, spacers for the boxes and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, you can make that stuff yourself instead of using like foam or, you know, other bags. Like it could fit perfectly around like the corners, and then you could make one that goes in the middle where it perfectly fits the bags. You could just design that kind of stuff and cut it yourself, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. I could have used that today. Honestly, I was boxing up a set today that's going to go out, and it looks great. But I said, man, maybe I should just spend the money and like get like the custom setup for a set of boards and then buy a ton of them and potentially maybe sell those as well. I'm always like thinking like, can I create something to sell, even though I'm, you know, getting it, you know, not from I'm getting it from Uline or something, whoever like comes up with that stuff. But it's a definite need for people, especially like garage builders that got to ship a set. They're hobbling together all their Amazon junk that they padding and whatnot. Yeah. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, like for example, people end up that find themselves in a niche like Frogpod, or, you know, Dave, you do some stuff that's like for makers. And, you know, I think that's like, once you find that, that ends up being like your big money maker. Is it, oh gosh, I'm going to butcher it. A Glimpse Inside, Chris, I think it is. He found his niche making things for people's shops and stuff like that. And what might be funny is if you end up, if you do that, because I don't think anybody's doing the boxes, and that ends up being like your big thing, you know, to the maker community.
Yeah, especially because cornhole is like a specific size, right? It has to be a certain width, certain length, certain thickness. And if you could get that dimension around everything and just people just kind of use it as a template, it'd be great. You know, that is a need, right? Because there's a lot of people making cornhole boards. The only difference is, you know, like how well people are doing the design on top or something like that. But really, if they're all shipping it, they're all going to need the same shipping stuff. And it might be worth it if the price is right and they're just making so many boards that they just can't be bothered with managing shipment, like making their own shipment stuff.
So some of the big cornhole operations are, they have their stuff dialed. So when you order from them, if they you can actually direct print on wood. So it's like UV printing on wood. And so if you submit your design, you can UV print it. Those operations have their stuff dialed. I mean, it comes in a perfect package. They all have, they've figured out their solutions to things. And so I think the niche for what we're talking about is a guy in his garage like me who doesn't have access to buying 1,000 boxes for his organization, and something that that is a solution for everything. Cause the boards are the same, but there's varying degrees of like overhang and corners and stuff like that, just like anything else. But anyway, that's, it's definitely something that I'm never opposed to, thinking out. I always think about like, can I make money on that? And it sounds so like, it sounds so gross when you say it, but it's like,
no it's not money.
It's not going to change my life, but it's like going to make me happy because I thought of something and did it, you know? Yeah. So
that's the right mindset to have, you know, like, is there a need for it and would people pay for it? And then you create it. I mean, that's it, you know?
Yeah. So Tyler, take me back to your first set of cornhole boards. So, right. Like we all had the first one that we made, and you probably went out on Instagram or YouTube and looked at somebody who was building it out of 2x4s, you know, Home Depot grade plywood. But tell us about your first set of cornhole boards. Is that what started the business, was the cornhole boards exactly?
Yes. And if I'm being honest, they were not that great. And I can be honest because my parents have that set. And so it's not like a customer where I'm going to say, hell, those are garbage. But like literally every time I went to my parents' house, they would go and they'd have a party or something. And they'd say, or just family over whatever. And they'd say, oh, you know, he made these. And I said, no. Like, let's not talk about that right now, because those are like generation 1 point.
Right.
Literally very beginning, you know, so.
So I saw in your post you had like a Gen 4, right? So like, is it still Gen 4, or are you on like Gen 7 now? Like, where are you at? And how has the generations evolved? And also, like, how have you built it when you started, and how are you building it now? Like, what tools are you using?
Ooh, there's a couple questions in there. First of all, Generation 1 is like any Generation 1. It's just 2x4s, and I don't even want to talk about it.
Oh no, we're doing Tyler exposed tonight.
Yeah.
You gotta talk about.
So since then, it went to Generation 2 for a little bit, and they got a little bit better. But Generation 3 is when they got like really good. Like, I'll say, Generation 3 is solid. I switched to all plywood builds, and they're all Baltic birch builds. Their quality. And then it just became marketing, because I would change, like, I would literally change maybe one or two things. Like Generation 3, I think I did some different things with the legs. And then like Generation 4 has like a dado, like inset, like airmail blocker, which is basically the leg piece that goes across in the back. And I put my logo on it. I'll laser my logo on there. So there's not a lot of change. Just like it's, I feel like it's like iPhones. It's like you just kind of sort of create the hype a little bit, and right. then you change. You do change a few things, and honestly, mm-hmm. they do get better. I mean, anything yeah. you make is going to get better when you make it 300 times. You know, so.
So you're on generation 4S?
Yes. Yes. I've just changed the software a tad, and I've made yeah. the camera a little bit better on there.
Right. right. When are you going to incorporate LED lights into the – or have right. you done that?
I'll do them by request. I'm very like – like we talked about with Dave earlier, I'm very artisanal about it. I'm kind of like, I'm kind of hipster
it's
about
artisanal.
It. Where I'm like, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm kind of a hipster about it where I'm like, no, that's not going to look good. That's going to look cheesy.
Right.
The lights yeah. are going to look weird or like, and that's kind of why I don't do like, and there's no, well, I don't even want to go there with it, but there's some designs that I just can't stand because they're just way overdone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're the same. And if you have that in your house, you have the same cornhole board as everybody else. But there is sort of like a OG cornhole style that's like, I don't know, like kind of classic looking with like less is more, basically. Right. And so I kind of like that. Right. And so a lot of my boards are the same. But I like to say it's like very high quality art versus like very crazy design. I don't know
yeah.
if that makes sense. But
yeah. But. So... Gen 1, was the hole, did you cut the hole out using a jigsaw or was it a hole saw, like the 6-inch hole saw?
We want to know how bad Gen 1 is.
Yeah. We keep going back to Gen 1.
I wish I had a picture of it. I probably deleted it.
You know, as the host, also, it's my job to find out where the weak spot is and just totally yeah. bury into that. So
just beat it. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Also, you mentioned Baltic Birch in like Gen 3. So what was it that you were using for Gen 1? Was it like MDF? Was it like
no. OBS? Well, it was from the big box store and it was like maple, but
yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I realized how bad the big box plywood was until I got the good stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking like triple B, like better. I mean, probably the best stuff I could get at the time for the price. I mean, obviously there's better stuff, but like, this was like really good. And this is like pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pre-Ukraine war.
Right.
Which is a watershed. Put a pin in that. We'll talk about that later for cornhole yeah. boards. But yeah, I was using big box stuff and I was using like $8 2x4s at that time. Cause Ooh. Like,
yeah.
Like 2x4s during the pandemic were like, oh my God, they're $9 and right. they were absolute garbage. So, mm-hmm.
so it looked like your first set looks like a Ruffle potato chip kind of thing. It's just kind of, it slides right down the middle.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. I don't even know where it is. I think I actually gave it away and I'm thinking about it right now. And I painted it. Okay. Full paint, mm-hmm. sides, the whole thing, everything. God, it was horrible. I literally like painted it with a brush.
Yeah.
Like that's
yeah.
how horrible it was. Like just, I don't know what I was thinking.
See, Dave, I knew he'd open
up. I'm gonna
pull
a picture out of it.
Yeah.
I can say that now because nobody owns it, but like, you know.
But it's good to know. You know, we all started somewhere, yeah. you know, like it's.
Well, and part of the show yeah. is there is people who have messaged me already who are like, I'm a beginner woodworker and mm-hmm. you know, it's so refreshing to hear somebody who's a beginner woodworker talk about, you know, in the first few episodes, we talked about, you know, where we all started. And it's good to hear that because a lot of the times you see somebody who's got, you know, 10,000, 30,000 followers or something like that. And you're like, oh, I'll never be at that level. Or you find yourself, hey, I think I'm better than that. And they've got 30,000 followers. I'm way better, you know. So we got people from all over the spectrum that listen to the show. So it's great to dive into this kind of stuff because we all started somewhere.
Yeah. I like to say that, you know, woodworking is, you can obviously master it. There are master woodworkers out there that people would consider masters. But woodworking is so great because you cannot... there's no possible way to know everything about woodworking, mm-hmm. right? You can be a master, but you can never mastered everything completely, which is the best part of it, is because so people that are at different levels have different abilities and skills. Like I make cornhole boards, I make smaller furniture stuff, I'll make, you know, various things, but like I know how to do that really well, but there's people that do other things really well that don't know how to do what I do really well. And so that's what I enjoy about it, is that like there's professional athletes and there's amateur athletes, and those are one like A and B or black and white.
Right.
But woodworking is like, no, everybody here is can do different things. So it's great.
I think what we love, I think we all love woodworking for the same reasons, because it's a lifelong pursuit of that perfection, or a lifelong pursuit of learning. Because once you learn, like, let's say to make a cornhole board, right? You might want to be like, well, I want to learn to make a chair. I want to learn to make a table. And then you could spend another like decade perfecting making a table or a chair, and you could make it a million different ways.
Right.
And there's so many different interpretations of doing it, so much styles and then techniques of doing it, right? You could do it all with hand tools, you could do it with power tools. It's just like, it's the vastness of woodworking is just what's amazing about it, right? Because if it was something really easy, you would learn it and you'd be like, I'm done. I'm like, that's it. And no one's talking about it, mm-hmm. right? So it's just, that's what's great about it. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. Well, at least you agree. I'm just kidding. Yeah, like, actually, we don't agree, Dave.
Yeah. It's really easy, and I perfected it. Right. Thank you. I perfected all aspects of it, and I have all the tools. So, yeah.
So now, version 4S, you're making it with a CNC. And so like,
partially, yeah.
Yeah. So like, tell us about that process, essentially, like what machines are you using and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the sheets come in the same way. They need to be broken down into, I'll basically take a 5x5 sheet. It makes one full set still. And, you know, I cut it down with the track saw. I do that all manually. So the decks themselves, they go right in the CNC, and I have a Shapoko 4. It's the biggest one, the XXL. It's very entry level in terms of CNCs. And I sort of did that on purpose. I've heard like, oh, buy your second CNC first.
Right.
But for me, I had no idea how to use it. And so there's a huge learning curve for me. And so I think that, cutting the holes on there was a first step. Then I actually designed the legs, where we designed the legs, had my friend Rob help me a little bit with those, mm-hmm. With, you know, getting the file perfect. And now I'll do all the legs on there. And then that allowed me to do different things with the legs and make them a little bit more creative and stuff like that.
Right.
But honestly, a lot of it is still very manual. Clamping the frames together and doing all the prep work for putting the board together is all manual. I mean, it's all mm-hmm. just, you know, drilling in pocket holes. I have a Craig Foreman. And so
that thing is awesome.
Doing 1,000 pocket holes a day is not out of the question. You know, I mentioned TYG, and I call it TYG affectionately. It's sort of like Temecula Yard Games is a mouthful. And I've actually thought about changing it to TYG Woodworks or something a little bit more accessible in terms of saying it.
Yeah.
But 2.0 is a lot less like batching and building. It's more like doing things in reverse in terms of like selling things back to the cornhole folks to do things. And so, I mean, cornhole folks, builders in their garage, people starting out. And so I sell the CNC plans on Etsy and all that kind of stuff. So,
okay. Do you find going back to the name thing, so Temecula Yard Games, do you find that it limits your clientele? Is that why you're thinking about potentially changing it?
It limits me in terms of like what I can produce. So like I need to create a different wing of TYG, because it's like, well, Temecula Yard Games, I don't need yard games. I need a table, or I need chair, or I need something different. And so to me, it's like the evolution of my skills has taken me to the point where I want to start making furniture, and I want to start making different things that are like more, frankly, they're going to net me a little bit more money for my efforts. And so I think that that's why I've thought about a change of sorts. So,
right.
And I already own the domain. So if anybody's going out there to buy the domain, I already own them, all of them. Yeah. Trust me.
Buy the domain before you mention it publicly. I've learned that lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. I own all of the pencil clip, domain names, I think. And they all renew at different times because I thought of different names, you know, as I was in bed one night.
Yeah, I back in the day when I was a young guy, whatever, that, you know, it's like .com is like people were doing that. They were buying URLs and like, mm-hmm, you know, right. They were buying domain names and whatnot. And it was like sort of a thing. And I came in the like back half of it where it was like all the good ones are gone, but I still thought I was going to like make it big on like domain names, and it was just garbage.
People are still doing it now. Like, know, you know, like, but... like Yeezy, like said something. It's just like, oh, shit, someone's like buying Yeezy.com or like, you know, whatever stupid word that just comes out, people are buying it right now.
Right.
Yeah.
That's lame.
Can I ask you about your shop? So you have a really tidy shop and all your posts and everything. It's really well organized. I appreciate that. I think Matt and I also have very organized shops.
Yeah.
And do you have to clean a lot to get the shots, or is it always pretty neat?
It's behind the camera.
Instagram versus reality. Yeah. Is it messy behind the camera?
It's cleaned up today, but it's definitely messy a lot. But
yeah,
okay. It's also sort of because it's my garage, and I jokingly call it the worldwide headquarters, just as like a stupid joke that I started a long time ago. It's like, oh, we're the worldwide headquarters. So my wife, I try to put her car in here. I used to be able to put both cars in here, and then I just sort of gave up on my side because I got tired of putting everything away every day. But like, mm-hmm, it's just sort of out of respect for the rest of the family in terms of like keeping it somewhat tidy versus like just sawdust everywhere. And it is like a health thing too. I don't want my kids out here with getting their basketball out with like mountains of dust on it and stuff like that. So plus it's a little OCD. It's like, I just want to keep it tidy. Yeah. I feel like I work better when I know where stuff is versus like tripping 100%. Over it. So
we can understand that.
when you go out in the shop and it's a mess, you lack the motivation to get started on something. So you might just walk in and like,
yes,
forget it.
Cause you look very organized, right? So like in some of your posts, it looks like you batch out the cornhole tables, like where you have like a set of 10 of them ready for them to be decorated or whatever. And then for the order to go out. So it just looks like you have like a very organized process of like doing your inventory or getting things ready. Or maybe just, you know, being efficient with your time to do some of the stuff here and there. And it shows. So
I appreciate
letting
that.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. It's born out of like almost like a nervous. So in terms of the organization of the boards and keeping the, like an inventory on it, it's like, if I get an order for five of them, you know, I have a full-time job. This isn't my full-time job. And so getting five of them, you know, that's 10 boards, getting that prepared for an order that I really want, because I really want that order. You know, I can say no, but like, I really want that order. And so I want to know what I have before I start talking to somebody about an order. And I know exactly how long it's going to take me in my head versus like having everything everywhere and just like having to slap it together and being pissed about coming out here and trying to finish stuff at midnight, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, when I get an order for a cutting board and I don't have anything ready to go, to me, it becomes more of a stress than, you know, I hear the bell go off and it's more stressful. And then you start not enjoying it as much. When you can stay ahead of it, though, I think that's good for your mental health, you know, too.
Yeah. 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 So I have limited time in here, so.
So do you typically work like all day Saturday, part on Sunday? Are you out there in the evenings? What's your work week look like?
So my professional work week is pretty typical. It's pretty 9 to 5, but in terms of like it depends on what I'm doing. It depends on what orders I have. So for instance, I had an order of 200 bottle openers recently. which was for an event. They need to be laser engraved. They need to be finished. And my process for those is like, it's clean, but it still takes time. And it's right. physically putting stuff in and gluing it in and doing the whole thing. And so I was out here some late nights, but typically I'll pick like one day and just kind of like alert everybody that like, hey, I'm going to be out here on Friday after the morning, and I'm going to be out here all day. And it's sort of like unspoken where it's like, oh, you know, like dad's in the shop, like, you know, not like don't bother him, he's not going to get mad, but it's like, no, dad's in the shop, he's doing his thing. And it's like, yeah, it's just sort of, and I've actually made it clear to people that it's like, oh no, like I need this to like recenter myself, to like get my stuff done and like reset myself for the week. So
I think a lot of woodworkers and people in the maker space are a little bit like hermits. You know, it's funny, you know, here we are on podcast talking to people, but we're talking about things that are enjoyable to us. Right. So it's an outlet for us, and working out in the shop, that's that outlet. And our families just don't get it. They just think that dad's out there, you know, cutting lumber for fun or something.
What it is, and making sawdust.
Right.
Yeah. What it is basically occupying your mind somewhere else where you could forget about the other things that you're doing.
Yeah.
Correct. Right?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Do you do this as a an income stream, or is it more it's your outlet and you're selling it to buy the tools and support your hobby?
Quickly, both. But the long answer is that I've actually, part of like 2.0 is to sort of create a passive stream so that I can enjoy myself in here a lot more.
Right.
And so far the first year on Etsy was tough until I really dug into what I needed to be doing and in SEO and all the different things that need to be done on Etsy for you to be able to be productive and sell.
Right.
You know, and I'd say like this year we're approaching 500 orders in terms of like,
wow,
you know, net orders is like last year I maybe had one and I was just terrible and I never didn't take the time to do it. But this year I really focused on creating a few little things that can sell that are supplement the rest of it. And so, yes, I do it to buy awesome tools and rad tools that are fun and exciting and that are going to make me better product. And that's how I justify it. It's like, oh, I need a domino because, you know, I'm going to make a better table. It's like, well, Tyler, you don't make tables. Yeah. So it's like,
I would if I had a domino.
No, I need it. And I actually bought that as like a tax. I needed to like spend money. So it's like, I knew it was like the end of the year. And like the accountant's like, hey, you should probably buy some more stuff. And it's like, whoa, twist my arm. I'll go out and buy a domino. You know,
you hear that, honey?
So, yeah, right.
Yeah, is your wife generally supportive?
Very, very. Yeah, she knows how much joy I get out of it. And anybody that asks me, so thanks for having me on the podcast. Anybody that asks me, I start to like talk about it and like get real excited about it versus, you know, other things that I don't want to do in life.
So what I'm always interested in, since we're talking about tools, is that, you know, a lot of us always, like, we have a lot of tools. Like, from your page, I've seen you got the Surf Prep Sander, you have the Festool Domino, you got the Festool Track Saw, you have a CNC, which is still your first CNC, maybe you want to upgrade. Like, what is your next tool? Like, what is the next big purchase?
So I've had to like pump the brakes on several things because I was like, well, do I really need that? And so I would love to get a bandsaw. I would love to get a high quality jointer. I have one, but it's not the best. Stuff that kind of can help me progress in terms of what I want to do. Truth is, I never know what my next tool is. I'm sort of like, just kind of just do it. It's like one day I'll just sit down and I'll be at work and I say, you know what? I need a CNC. That's it. I'm doing it. Screw it. I'm going to do it.
Okay.
You just kind of got to do it. And I truly believe, and write this down, is that I truly believe that better tools make you more productive.
They do.
They make high quality. You yield more high quality stuff. And anybody that says otherwise maybe hasn't made the same things that you're making, because they definitely help. And I'm super happy with all my stuff. Shout out to Surf Prep. I love Surf Prep. They're local for me, and so that's why I appreciate them. And I bought all that stuff before I even knew any of those people. And so it's really changed my situation.
That's awesome.
Expensive tools and high tech tools close that skill gap, right? like the Domino is a perfect example. You pay a lot for it, but you could do joinery like Legos compared to someone who spent their entire lives cutting tenons and dovetails. Right. Granted, those are traditional and they look aesthetically different, but like it makes the job so much easier and also mechanically strong. So yeah, right. Totally understand that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to save the hand tools for when I get old, you know, and then,
yeah,
you know, then it'll just be like, I'll take my time.
Yeah. I had somebody on TikTok come after me one time about, well, you don't know how to do like traditional joinery. And I said, well, you're right, because I have this Domino here that helps me do that. And I've skipped all that other joinery because I don't want to do that. And so it's like, if I was a professional, yeah, I would probably be making tables with some different joinery and learning my craft a little bit more. But it's like, nah, man, I just want to make a table. Like
this goes back to what we were saying about woodworking, right? Like there's so many different paths you can take to become your woodworker, like your definition of woodworker. Sure. And it's like, yeah, some guy could be like, you know what? I want to spend like 5 years of my life learning all the joinery aspects before I build my furniture. Whereas like we're working, we want to build that table by this weekend, right, and we're going to do it with a Domino and get it done. Yeah. We're not going to spend like 3 weeks cutting mortises with the chisel and a hammer. You know, it's like,
it's really good content. So the tool wars are very good content. So if you ever need something content wise, just post up a really fancy tool and say, this is the greatest tool ever.
Right.
People will come after you and say like, I've been using my grandpappy's saw that he bought in 1947. Yeah. It works fine. And you're like, okay, dude, like fine.
Yeah.
Do your thing. But
it's so funny. Like it's like, oh, I could do mathematics, you know, using a paper and a pencil. Like, well, I have a calculator or I have an algorithm that can do it for me. You know, why would I, if you have a smarter way of doing things. Now, if you really enjoy doing it, you know, that way, then go for it, you know, but don't come at me, bro.
Yeah. My favorite is getting a tradesman really upset about how my tool is better than their Milwaukee or something. Yeah. Oh, man. Don't go after their Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah.
Or their DeWalt. they'll come after you.
The Milwaukee army is strong.
I have a video that's actually how to find the center of a circle, right? Mm. It's finding the center of a bottle opener circle.
Yeah.
And I did it like the geometry teacher way of doing it on purpose, because I knew people would be like, why'd you do that?
Right.
Why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do this? And it's like the most like popular video on any platform because people just argue over it. It's like, I'm just finding the center of the circle, dude. Like, doesn't matter how I got there. Like, this is how I did it. You do it however you want to do it. So it's funny.
You're giving me everyone's great ideas for YouTube content. I might do a video that says like hand tools suck or something, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when Matt's
everyone's
got to
be right.
That's great.
Temecula Yard Games. We've been talking about cornhole. Are there other yard games that you do and sell? Or because I have one that I really love playing. It's called Cube or Cub. Do you know Cub?
I do not. Go explain it to me. Yeah, tell me.
So Cub. It you can make it out of wood, right? So this might be a new product for you, but it is a game that started around the same time as cornhole. I did some research. You guys know how long ago cornhole started? Do you have a guess?
I'm going to say any idea? 1800s.
You like nailed it. It's like 1819 around then cornhole started.
What did I win?
And I got some facts, but then you bragging rights for guessing obscure yard games dates. But but in Sweden, there was a game that came out called Cub, K-U-B-B. And it's very similar to cornhole, except that there's like these sticks that you throw and you have to hit these pillars on the other side of the field. And it's similar to bowling and chess, right? So it's very similar to cornhole in that you're chucking something, but there's some more strategy involved. But all the pieces could be made out of wood. You basically need like these hardwood dowels, and then basically a couple of like 2x2 pillars and like a 3x3 pillar or a 4x4 pillar, whatever you want. Check it out. I think it's something you could add to it, and it's a very fun game. So me and my friends play it all the time as yard games. And you can make it. It's wood. And the one I have is a pretty decent set, but yeah.
Huh. I'll check it out. I will definitely check that out. I like to, so to the question that you asked, I like to call myself like the, and I don't know, may not be familiar, but you've heard of In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I'm from California.
So In-N-Out Burger has like, okay, perfect. So, you know, but, In-N-Out Burger has like 5 things on their menu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've explained it like this because I'm just, I don't know. I just think it's funny, but it's like TYG is the In-N-Out of yard games makers. It's like, we got like 3 things and one of them is like a cornhole set, Jenga. I've done Jenga for sure.
That's a good one.
And then, you know, I try to dabble in a couple other things, but it's just kind of like you get undercut by the big box retailer. So it's like, okay, like, and even cornhole boards too. I mean, people know the difference. They're like, those things are junk. Don't buy those for $100 wherever, you're wasting your money. But like all of these games are available at like, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, you know, like, and so that's when I was like, well, why would I make that when somebody, it's going to take me, and even the Jenga too, it's like, okay, you can buy that for like $60. I'm going to charge you 200. Yeah. And so it's like, oh yeah, I'll sell it to a friend who just wants to like support my business. But in terms of like volume, I haven't really approached that yet. So that's kind of my answer on that. And so I have the 3 or 4 things and they're the best things that you can buy. But like, you know, I haven't dabbled on the other ones.
But even In-N-Out has a secret menu. So what's in the secret menu?
The secret menu is, I will make whatever. It's just, you may have to wait on it a little bit and it may be very expensive.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean,
I'm sure you get,
you know, I've made friends stuff and
like people snapshot something from Pinterest and they're like, can you make this? And you instantly know they're asking, can you make this for cheaper? They just leave out that last part. So what's the number one item that you think that people come to you asking, can you make this?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. It was for a while. It was that weird game that everybody's playing during the middle of the pandemic. It was the little hoops that like were attached to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. People were playing them at bars. People were always saying, you know, and I thought about it for a little bit, but the power of saying no to projects is sort of like a lesson that you learn over time, where it's like at the beginning, you want to take everything on.
Right.
You want to take it all. You want to make all that money. And it's like, after a while, you're like, if I was a professional, I would take all the money, right? If I was feeding my family with this, I would say, yes, bring it all on. I want to scale up. But like, to me, this is sort of a lifestyle business. And so that impacts my lifestyle when I'm up till 1 a.m. trying to put together a little game that swings little washers or whatever, you know? So,
well, I feel like that, you know, like if you did make that, right, and you know, you are pretty smart and you are organized. Yeah. I mean, you could basically make the whole thing on the CNC, cut it out of one board, cut all the holes, and you're literally dominoing the thing on and tying a string to the hoop and that's it. Right.
Totally.
So you could streamline it if you were, but it wouldn't be like, it would be spending the energy to design it the one time. And then, so you could just batch it out every other one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would figure you would do it.
Yeah. So so I look at things like that where I'm like, I'll get online and I'll say, okay, like, where can I buy this cheaper in bulk? I do my research. And so like a lot of the stuff is like, well, no, I can buy like 20 of those from China for less on Alibaba or something. And it's like, well, no, the gold in my situation is typically like the cornhole board is what it is. Everybody can build a cornhole board, but the art is always like the factor that brings people to me is like, okay, I can make you whatever you want. It'll be a one of a kind piece of art that you'll have forever. And I don't say it's art, but it's like, nobody else in the world will have what you have. And that's sort of a selling point, I guess. And people there's people that like that and they want to pay for that. And they understand that I stand behind it. And if it breaks, I say, look, I'll fix it. No problem.
Right.
I'll come pick it up. You know, they're close.
Yeah.
Well, so I think we've got something. I'm looking at the time and I definitely want to get to this.
Yes or no?
It's time for yes or no. It's the game. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast where we've played this before. Mm-hmm. So Dave, Trey, and I did it last week in the after show for the Patreon members. But I want to give them a little bit of a taste of this game. So you have three options with the game, yes or no. You could say yes, no, or you can do a hard pass. All right. Mm. So far, okay. No pressure, but nobody's used the hard pass. Ooh. Yeah. So no pressure.
Oh wait,
we're all about the peer pressure.
Last episode.
Oh,
last episode we had a take back, right? You can have one take back.
Yeah. Like... So in Dave's rules, we play also where you can change your answer, and he did it twice, and I did it once. Okay. So I was guilty of that as well. That's not in the official rule book, but we'll allow it.
Fair. The secret menu. It's on the secret
menu. Yeah. So yes, no, or you can do a hard pass. Again, no pressure. Okay. Don't be the first guy because I will blast you all over the reels.
Fair.
So yeah, we're all about the peer pressure here on the Make a Lounge podcast. Okay. So you answer the question, just solid yes or no, and everybody will answer, and then we'll come back around and talk about it. Unless it's super boring, then we just skip on to the next question. All right.
Fair.
Since you're the guest, you get to go first. Mm-hmm. Let me scroll to the questions.
Oh, I have to ask the question.
No. He asked the question.
Yeah.
Ooh, that'd be a new twist. I like that. All right, here we go.
He gets one at the end.
Yeah. All right. Everybody loves the bell. All right, first question. Signed up for a subscription delivery service like the DVD of the Month Club or Book of the Month?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Can I guess, were we all the DVD or the CD of the Month Club back in the 90s?
Yes.
See, secretly, this is my way of making myself. This is a secret way of making myself feel better about all of my inadequacies.
I still owe Columbia House thousands of dollars for those CDs that they sent.
I was trying to think of the name of it, Columbia House. That's right.
Yeah. It was on the back of the magazines where you.
It was like impossible to cancel the thing.
$10.
Like they, you had to.
Yeah, it was a scam.
Total scam.
Yeah.
I still have, like, I had YouTube TV even, right? So this is not necessarily a subscription basis, but I had YouTube TV, and then we switched over to Fubo so I could watch the Astros games. And we got to get to that. I have a question from that was submitted, by the way. So I switched over to Fubo. I put my YouTube TV on hold. And 3 months later, it came back, and I still haven't canceled it. So now I have both, and it's, like, so dumb. They make it impossible.
Yeah.
So any other – what's the most interesting besides, like, DVD or CD club? Have you had any other, like, weird ones?
I got one. I think it's interesting for 3D printing, right, since you guys kind of dabble in it too. But there's a subscription service called MakerBox where once a month they send you sample filament. It's like I don't know how long it is. It's like 3, 4, 5 meters of filament, but it's from different brands in a box. So you get to try like different colors. You can try like, you know, exotic filaments, glow in the dark, wood, without buying like a full roll.
Oh, that's cool.
So you could do it for like a couple of months, and it's like $20-25, and you just get like a bunch of stuff. And I did it for like over a year, and I have like drawers right here full of just sample filament. And if I ever need to print something, and I'm like, I need it in like red, like I have it,
right?
Like I just print it in that red color or pink or purple. I have that color. But also like I've tried like really, really wild stuff that I wouldn't have like been able to spend like $80 on a roll just to try it out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So
My wife signed me up for the bow tie, and I talked about this when Joseph was on the podcast, but my wife signed me up for the bow tie of the month club for 12 months because I wore a bow tie one time and she thought I looked really good on it. So she signed me up for the bow tie of the month club. So I've got 12 bow ties, actually 13 bow ties.
Okay.
So that's probably the weirdest one that.
That's pretty weird. Yeah.
But nice selection. All right. Next question. Okay. Gave one of your unsold projects to someone and told them that you made it especially for them.
Gave it to them?
Yeah, or sold it to them.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Kinda, yes. I'll say right. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a yes. But I'm more interested, Tyler, with your hesitant answer.
Well, I mean, I had to think about it because there's, you know, sometimes I'll make things and they just fail, right? And they just do not sell. Okay. So here's a good one actually. So I had a guy who ordered a cornhole set from me. We agreed on the color. It was a sports team, happened to be red. He didn't like the red that I put on there. So I said, this was very early on, so it was very forgiving. And I said, okay, well, I'll make another one. Mm. And so I made the next one. And I messaged him. I said, hey, it's ready. Come pick it up. Didn't come pick it up for a month. So I ended up selling the new one for more than he nice. Bought it from me. So, because nice. He didn't come to pick it up. So,
yeah.
Sorry, buddy. Yep. And that may not be, that's a little different than just like, selling it to somebody else.
I'll accept it.
That guy's a jerk, man. He just didn't want it. You know?
It's water under the bridge. I made more money. Yeah. I made double money, so it's
fine. There you go. Had a post go viral.
Yeah?
Yes.
All right. It's an audio medium, so people won't be able to see you shaking your head.
Sorry.
I'm giving you a hard time. Yeah. So yes. what defines viral? 1 million?
Huh. What defines? Oh, no. Yeah. So I had one, and this is probably the reason why I have, you know, I don't have a lot of followers, but enough. Mm-hmm. But I had one that had 10 million views.
Wow.
And it was me making a massive mistake on a table saw. But I will let you in on the inside baseball on that is that I saw the mistake happen the first time and I recreated it for a reel the second time.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's good.
Yeah. So that one was hot because people love to tell you how terrible you are and blah, blah, blah. Like I had some nasty comments like, you should probably just get rid of that. Like you're a this, you're a that. And it was just a banger. And then it really blew my account up. I think I probably got 2,000 or 3,000 at least, you know, in like a week.
Right.
Followers was like, whoa, what is happening?
Well, it's funny. Like when you do something like that, people that you have all the negative comments, but if for every negative comment, you have gained like 10 or 100 followers.
Jokes on
right.
them.
That's the thing that I keep reminding myself. It's like when a post like that and you get all those negative comments, it's like, you gotta remind yourself. It's like, look at that engagement.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like that is awesome. Yeah. Cause that's just feeding that monster to just be even more of a viral
thing. Do you
thing.
Pin the comments? Yeah. Like the negative comments, do you pin them up at the top so that people will see them and interact with them?
I reply to literally every comment. I try to reply to everything just in general, but like I reply to every negative comment possible. It used to bother me. I'm not going to lie. When I first started, I thought, oh, everybody hates me. But now I'm like, let's get some more engagement. Let's get six more comments on this. Like until they start talking about my mom and my dog and all that kind of stuff. Like, bring it on. I love it. So
I used to be the same way. I used to feel like I had to justify myself. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I'm actually like, I know they're trolls. So I'm like poking at them. you know, mm-hmm. kind of just like, what right. did I do wrong? And then they're just like, they'll go right. after it again. It's just like, you commented, yeah. you commented back again, idiot. Yeah. And then I would let him go forever. And then at the end, like when I'm done with it, I'm just like, you know, I'm just doing this to get engagement, right? And then just right. like dead after that. Yeah. They're just like, they don't reply back anymore. Like, thank they're the ones concerns. Feeling like the idiot.
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, when I first had a couple that popped off, I was not prepared for it, like mentally. I thought I was getting the negative comments and stuff like that. And I'd always seen it on other people's posts and think like, how do they deal with that? But it only takes a couple. Mm-hmm. And then you realize, yeah, this is great. Like, I'll feed the trolls mm-hmm. all day long. And then you start finding things.
Yeah.
You start recreating your table saw thing and posting it just for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, here we go. Got a couple more. Speaking of which, this is, man, perfect segue. You teed this up. Installed the blade backwards on your table saw.
No.
No.
No, I haven't either. Well, that's boring. I thought I was teeing this thing up. Like, great. Matt, you suck as a host.
You kind of thought I had done that, so you're like, yes, this one's perfect.
Well, no, I mean, so I've seen other people post it before, and I'm like, who does that? So I thought, well, yeah. let me ask it, right? What other way than to out somebody when they're on the spot? All right,
yeah.
Let's see. This one I know is a solid yes for you. This is. All right. Own a pair of Crocs.
Yep. Yes.
No.
Yes, I'm the.
I'm a no. So.
Oh,
he's using his take back the answer.
No. Well, it's so I own a pair of Vans that are made exactly like Crocs, but they're not Crocs.
Okay.
They're like the same material, but they're shaped like a van slip on. Yeah. So it's technically not a Croc, but it is a Croc.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's still a foot sweater.
So
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
want to see that. Those.
It's a hipster Dave thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's Dave trying to level up. He's like, oh, these aren't Crocs. It's like the,
no,
oh, these
not.
Are
they're
Vans. But are they still a dad shoe?
I think so. Yeah, they don't look cool at all. Yeah.
No, but they're pretty useful. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I have some that I just wear out here all the time. People are like, "You shouldn't wear those. You're gonna drop stuff on your feet." I'm like, "Nah, I'm good. I'm not.
You're
if I'm gonna drop stuff on my feet, I'm probably wearing shoes. If I'm doing anything that's like dangerous." Yeah, I love me some Crocs. But I actually don't even. Oh, full disclosure, I don't even have the good Crocs.
Oh, really? So how many pair do you own?
I have the knockoff Crocs. I don't even have the real brand. That's how cheap I was on that. They're like Amazon Crocs or whatever, like Bezos Crocs or something.
Oh, nice.
I get in trouble for going barefoot in my shop because my shop is attached to my house. Yeah. And oftentimes I'm running in there to just film something, right? Mm-hmm. Or like an idea. But I'm not like, if I'm actually doing any woodworking, I'm not actually...
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, barefoot, but the thing is, I oftentimes I'm doing like a story and I am just barefoot.
So to the topic, I was, I'll actually hop out here even when I'm not building anything mm-hmm. just to like film something real quick.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, I got this idea. I'm going to hop out here and whatever. And like, I find myself just like, just throwing on sandals or whatever. Like, you
same.
Know.
Yeah, same. I'll get a package and I'm doing I'm opening a package and you see my feet and they're like, you're not wearing shoes. I'm like, I'm not doing anything heavy, you know? Like, I'm not using any blades. It's like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? A cardboard box is going to drop on my foot. Like, guys, relax.
Right. You can measure your risk at this point. Like, you're not, you know, like, yeah, if anyway. OSHA's not walking through your door, so.
Yeah. I've dropped a sharp chisel on the floor before. I understand, you know?
Yeah.
I understand that could be really bad.
But that's different, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of table saws or any saw, cut yourself with a saw.
No.
Any saw? Like, yes.
Any saw. Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm a yes. All right, Dave, what's your are you going to use your chase your answer?
Let me think about it.
Okay, Dave, what about you?
I've stabbed myself with my handsaw. All my hand tools I've hurt myself with. Not any power tools, but any hand tool I've hurt myself with it. Like, I've stabbed myself with a saw and slightly cut myself, but not, you know, bad. But I have these dovetail chisels where I've cut myself on the side of the chisel, and I've sharpened my knives before, where I've got it so sharp that I've cut myself. So it's yes.
And mine was my first. It was in wood shop in seventh grade, and I was using a saw, and I had a little piece, and I was holding the piece, and my finger was on the opposite side of it, and just right into that, took meat with it, the whole deal. It was a handsaw. It wasn't a power tool. I think, you know, power tool ones, that's the ones you know that are scary, but those are the ones that probably don't happen as often.
Does hitting your knuckle on the blade when you're changing the blade count? Because you know how you have to do the whole motion. And like, does that count? Because I've definitely done that for sure.
I'll count it. That's miserable.
If it's an injury, it's an injury, right?
It's not devastating, but it's like right in the knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's dripping some blood, it's cutting.
Hey, listen, there's a reason why there's a first aid kit hanging in a prominent spot on my wall. It's not there for looks. Mm. I mean, I pull that thing out regularly. I'm starting to cringe just thinking about it.
Do you put quick clot in yours?
No, that I actually should get some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Get some quick clot. That's what I have. A lot of Starbond. But the quick clot is if you put it on a cut, it clots it up real quick.
Right.
So,
my Barbie Band-Aids just are not big enough for my size fingers. So I probably should invest in a better kit. All right, here we go. This one might hurt. Told your wife you were coming back inside in 5 minutes, knowing that you had hours to go.
Yep.
She won't listen to this. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is dangerous because this is not in the after show. This is in the. I think we've all done that. Let's not talk more about it. Mm-hmm. Let's just move right on. Right. All right. Last question. Have too many clamps.
No.
No.
Yeah,
it's impossible.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I should have saved a better one for the last one because we already knew the answer to that. You can never have enough clamps.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you partial to, and this is not a sponsored thing or anything like that. Are you partial to any particular brand, or are you just like, I'll use anything as long as it works?
I'm not brand specific, but I definitely am quality specific. You know, bad clamps are bad clamps. There's just no getting around it. You don't really realize it until you use them like we do. I actually just bought some, there's a really good, well, I'm not plugging it, but I got some new clamps today, longer, bigger Pony Jorgensen clamps. I just needed some bigger ones. I have some Bessie ones as well, and I really like those.
The Cabinet Masters, over, the K-Bodies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do have some junky clamps that I have bought over the years, and I won't say the brand. I'm not going to do that, but I think you all know where I'm going with this. You know.
Are they blue? And from the big box store? Blue and yellow?
Well, yeah, those too. I forgot about those, but there's another those are the, store.
Those are the brand. Yeah. That everybody starts out with those.
I will say that I have Harbor Freight clamps, mm-hmm. if that's what we're talking about.
That's where I was going. Yeah,
And I've altered them to be better, and they're fine, right? Yeah. But there is a huge difference between those and the red ones, right?
Right. Oh yeah.
And also to your answer earlier for the yes or no, when I was going through garage sales, I was seeing tons of vintage old wood clamps, you know, the ones with the two handles that you do this.
Right.
And I kind of have too many of them.
Right.
That I don't use them all the time. But I do when I use up all my clamps and I need more clamps, I bust those out and they work great. But I do feel like I have an unhealthy amount of wood clamps. And when I see it, I'm just like, I'm buying it.
You know what those are really good for is like I'm working on the church pews, right? And trying to find weird, like if it's over 60 inches long, because those bevel in, I could do a weird clamping angle and then clamp another clamp to that. So you're using that as a holder to clamp another clamp to. So those are really good for that.
Yeah, they have some really great uses.
I think I look at it like, well, okay, I'm going to make something. I'm going to spend all of this time making something, or, you know, I'm about to glue up something with this expensive hardwood. Now it's more expensive than it's ever been, but like just like all the tools that I have, I'm not going to use an inferior clamp to put that together and potentially ruin my work. That's the way I look at it. It's like, well, I'm going to use a decent clamp that's not going to ruin my work. That's kind of how I look at clamps. Yeah. I didn't always look at it like that. I went to the Harbor Freight a few times, but they do have some like ones that I've seen people buying lately. They kind of mimic
they have some nicer clamps now.
Yeah. The all metal ones that that's blue.
Yeah.
It works really good. I have those. They work great.
Yeah.
I have some really long ones. They're fine. Yeah.
Cool. Initially I was talking about Irwin. You know, I think like we all started with the Irwin clamps and that type of thing.
They're middle. I'd say they're right in the middle. You know? They're not great. They're not bad. They're right in the middle.
Right.
It's such a hard thing to buy because you're like, this is a clamp, you know, like you spend a lot of money on a clamp. It's not exciting. It's not like a track saw or something cool. It's like a clamp.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's
like buying a shovel.
Or a post digger. It's going to save you a crap ton of time, but you're going to only use it a couple times or whatever. But when you use it, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was a game called
Yes or No.
Whose voice do you think that is?
I don't know. Can you play it again?
Yes or No.
I don't know.
No guesses? Yours truly.
Is it somebody we know?
It's me.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I put on my radio voice and dubbed it over and put some reverb to it. So I was messing around with some audio stuff.
You were sitting on the toilet, you mean.
Right. Yeah, that's right. I had my head in the bowl to get the extra reverb. I was washing my beard and just something came to me. Yeah. No, I was messing around with Audition because I have the whole Adobe suite and there's apps that I haven't even thought to use. And it's like, let me try this thing out. All right.
Nice.
So that was it. Not so good. we've got a couple more questions we're going to probably fire at you.
Cool.
So I don't think we talked about the jig that you have for your cornhole board set. Is that something that you saw and modified, or is that something? It's an awesome jig. And it looks like it speeds up your efficiency like crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody kind of has their own modification on the same jig. So I have a frame jig, a leg jig, a hole drilling jig, and probably some, I'm looking around, I probably have some other jigs that I forgot about, but they're kind of just, you kind of just, it's such a base, a lot of the operations are so basic. It's like, okay, put a box together, but it's like, you know, do it perfectly and do it the same every time is another thing. And so the, the frame jig actually has some like metal pieces in it and some like blocks that hold it perfectly in line. So I can just slap it all in, do the thing, take it out, go on to the next one. And then the leg jig is dialed in perfect so that the legs are perfect every time, which is the most important part. I mean, if you screw up the legs on a cornhole set,
right,
it's going to ruin the whole thing. And so in a lot, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And I know people are like, oh, I can build that, blah, 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 which everybody could build it. But there's some subtle things that, that I would notice if somebody did them incorrectly, like a board that rocks and stuff like that. And so to the question, I think that I've just kind of come up with them over time out of necessity. And they've changed over time. I've had so many jigs. I actually have a, there's a, I made a video one time cutting old jigs, and I was like nostalgic for the old jig. It's like, I use this jig. This is the best jig. I've used this for a year or like whatever, you know, stuff like that. So,
yeah. So you don't use the paint can every time?
I did use the paint can. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. What's the paint can? I don't know the paint can.
So the paint can, the paint can is almost 12 inches tall, typically, like the typical paint can. It's, and so it's perfect if you hang the legs over the edge of the table with the paint can underneath in the middle, you can measure the angle on the leg to cut it the correct angle. But the way my legs are designed, there's like a positive stop on your miter saw. That it's the same every time. It's like 22 and a half or whatever it is. I need to look at it, but, and that's another thing is I forget numbers because I use the jigs all the time. So it's like when somebody asks me, oh, what's the size of your this and that? I'm like, man, I should know that, but I just forgot. Cause I don't think about it. So
that's the best way you had all of it. Not
like memorized. I thought you had all the numbers memorized and you were, you know, just out there chopping stuff down.
Yeah, yeah, I sure do. Just memorize in my head. But so what do
you, so what do you use for the CNC exactly? Like, what do you cut on the CNC? Because in my mind, when you're when I'm like when I think of building a cornhole table, I would have it so that it literally cuts the board, cuts the hole, and when for the skirts, it would actually drill the hole where the legs would go, and the legs would cut out with the right angle for the you know where pivots, and also a hole where you would probably put the bolts or nuts in. So it's like, so like what, so you, it seems like you have a jig that does the hole placements and stuff like that. Do you, so what do you actually cut on the CNC?
So I do the holes and I do the legs, and that's because the CNC itself is not large enough to do the whole set. So there are people with large enough CNCs where they'll just place the sheet down, do the thing, cut the whole thing out. And that's what they do. And so I just don't have a large enough CNC. And so I do what I can on there in terms of the bed size of it. But the rest of it, and I'm, to be honest, to be perfectly honest with you, it's actually easier for me to do them just as fast by like ripping the whole. So it's a 5x5 sheet. Mm-hmm. Once it's all cut up, I rip down the 2.5 strips on a table saw. And then I'll chop them down to the right size, and then I'll have parts, and then I round them over and do the pocket holes and all that kind of stuff. And so,
got it.
You know, if you've used a CNC, it's like, okay, there's a lot going on there more than most people think. It's not just like press the button and let it go. It's like, oh no, I got to find the perfect, you know, this, all the numbers that you need to compute, you know, the sizes in the middle and all that kind of stuff. So,
right. Okay. No, that makes sense. The bed size makes sense.
So, Tyler, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with us. And, Dave, thanks for coming back and co-hosting with me. It's been really fun, you know, just kind of getting to know you a little bit more. And Tyler, I don't think we've even done a FaceTime or anything like that before. So it's been great getting to know you. So thanks for saying yes to coming on the podcast. Dave, where can they find you on the socials?
I am on, my handle is 3DDIYDave on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. But I am most active on Instagram, and you guys can find me there.
Okay, awesome. And Tyler, how about you?
So I am at Temecula Yard Games on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube Shorts, and that's my handle everywhere, actually.
Okay, awesome. And I'm Matt with Voltner Woodworking, and you can find me on all the socials at Voltner Woodworking. And I always tell people, no need to follow me on TikTok because it's just reposted content from Instagram. Thank you so much for joining me in the lounge. Please take a moment to give us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. And you can find the Maker Lounge podcast on Instagram at Maker Lounge Podcast. Give ideas for future shows by sending an email to MakerLoungePodcast@gmail.com or send us a DM on Instagram at MakerLoungePodcast. Lots of ways to get a hold of us, and everything all will be in the show notes. So if you didn't catch it, it'll be in the show notes there. Thank you so much for the patrons who signed up on patreon.com/MakerLoungePodcast. Thank you to our rockstar patrons, Jimmy McAnally and Matthew with Arciano Sirio. I think I said that right this time. We talked a little bit about it in the pre-show. So catch us on Patreon. Thank you to our groupies, Steve with Making It at Home, and our new groupie, Justin with J&E Designs. And then we've also added Annette with 513 Woodwork. So thank you, Patreon members. You will get access to the after show, and you will get an email for that. And so make sure you head over to the after show. That's where we're going to head over. You guys ready to go to do the after show?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you all. And be good humans. I don't know. I'm still trying to think of an outro. We are heading into the after show. If you're not a patron, we'll see you next week for another great episode. But if you are, you will receive a link to listen to the after show. Thanks so much for listening and sharing the podcast with your friends.